This is the Unstoppable Authors Podcast with worldbuilding warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable.
Welcome to episode 177 of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. Today, we're rounding up our series on organisation.
But before we get into the main topic, it's everyone's favourite segment. It's accountability time.
Yay! Oh, we love it.
Right before we hit record, we were all agonising about this. So this is going to be an interesting update. Okay, so I had a really good writing week, sort of week before last, followed by kind of slow one, and the realisation that I was once again writing the wrong book. And I'm kind of sick of this happening, and I would quite like to stop being distracted by shiny squirrels and just be able to focus on something. So I'm going to talk to my coach about that. I was frustrated, but at least it happened after only a few days and 6,500 words. And not like 50,000 words into something, you know, that would have been bad. So, it got me writing again because I got sick of the editing and just needed to draft something, and it got me going. I got words on the page. And it also helped to reignite my enthusiasm for Shifts of London, which is one of my series that I've sort of started and stalled on a few times. So it was valuable. I'm glad I tried it and have learned something important about what I should be doing. So yeah, let's find the positives in things. Last time All right, it's not all bad. I said I would be working through Market Better Faster, which I have been doing, and that's been so good. Although each like lesson I'm like, it's almost being given permission to not do the things that you don't really want to do. Like social media, it's not for everyone. It's fine, don't do it. Ads, not for everyone, don't do it. I feel like I'm noping out of absolutely everything. So I'm a bit worried there'll be nothing left. But anyway, we'll see. I'm only like halfway through the course, so we'll see. I said I was going to work on my nonfiction book, which I have been doing. I did an interview with a writer that I absolutely love and admire, and learned a lot from her, and that was really, really good. So yeah, that's good, but that's more or less all I've done on the nonfiction book. That's sort of stalled a little bit. And laughably, I said I would try to finish the draft of the secret pen name project that I was working on in January, which I abandoned about 4 days after we recorded that episode.
Oh dear.
I just suddenly, like really suddenly, got sick of it and just really didn't want to do it, so I stopped. And I switched projects again since then. So February's just been, I don't know, it's been a month, guys. It's been a month.
Yeah, it has.
So I'm going to attempt to set goals for March, but I'm going to hold them really lightly. We'll see what actually happens, because so far this year, I've changed direction more times than I can count. So,
and it's only been 2 months.
Yeah. I'm going to keep chipping away at research and preparation for the non-fiction book, but I would like to start getting some actual words down on that as well, but that's a lower priority than almost everything else in my life right now. And I would like to add 25,000 words to the first Shifts of London book, but I hate being specific about that because I'm scared I'm going to change my mind again.
Well, it will encourage our listeners to come back next month to see if you actually did what you said.
Yeah.
I think that's the point of accountability at this point, just for our listeners to come back and go, oh, yet again. Oh, yeah. Dear. My update, oh, I don't know where February went. And I'm sure I say this every month, but it just disappeared, floated away like a very fast
cloud.
It is
a very short month, though. Let's blame that.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay, let's blame that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'll jump straight into accountability because I did what I said, almost, what I said I was going to do for February, which was to push ahead with the book formatting formula. I did say I'd work on the website, which I didn't do, but it's kind of approaching the end of the book part of it, which is very exciting. I just have one chapter left to do and like all the back matter kind of stuff, and then it's done, and then I can jump into the course and the website and just get it out into the world. So yeah, I am quite laser focused on that book at the moment, because I've been saying I'll publish it for about 2 years. So maybe not that long. But yeah, I got another formatting client recently, and I've got some lined up for March. So yeah, I'm kind of really in formatting mode, which makes me feel a bit less of a writer sometimes. So I'll be glad to get back into fiction, but I really need to get this kind of phase done first. Yeah, so for March, it's just the same again. Carry on. Keep on with the formatting until it's done.
Sounds like you're really close, though.
I am.
On the book.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've got a proofreader booked in and editor and stuff, so it's
awesome.
So since my last personal update, we have run Burton Sci-Fi and Fantasy Con, which was absolutely amazing. It was the biggest event that we've hosted yet, and I will admit there were many moments when I honestly felt like everything was going to fall apart, but we did pull it off, and it was amazing and a huge success. So yeah, really pleased. And we're already planning for next year already and making it even bigger again, because clearly we are completely insane. So after Burton Sci-Fi Fantasy Con, I have had a bit of unexpected and enforced rest. I've badly injured the tendons in my right arm, and being right-handed, that's quite an important arm for me. And it's left me completely unable to use my arm, completely unable for several days. I'm starting to get some movement back now, but it's still very painful, and I have to be really careful to make sure I am actually resting it and not doing too much. So yeah, I've honestly spent the last few days doing nothing more than sitting on the sofa, resting my arm on a cushion and watching Netflix. And I have got to say that I am bored. Like, I want, once upon a time that would have been my dream, but I can't do anything else. I can't wait to get back to work. Like, it's always sounds so stupid, doesn't it? But I really can't wait to do stuff again. But I have to remember to pace myself, which is really difficult for me because I am so impatient. I'm very frustrated right now, and the sensible part of me is constantly talking down that impatient part of me, because I really don't want to injure it again. I'm actually doing my first ever 2-day event next weekend. I'm trading at LARPCon in Colville, and I'm giving a talk there too, so I need to be relatively fit and able for that, because it 2 days, it's gonna wipe me out. Like, even without a bad arm, I do not know how I'm gonna get through 2-day event. I've never done one before, so yeah, I'm quite scared. So I'm trying to be very good and rest, which yeah, all of that means not a lot of stuff got done this month. So hopefully that's a good enough excuse.
Yeah, an injury is definitely a good
reason. Oh, yeah, all right. Meet your goals.
So, March. So I really want to get my next world building guide published next month. And I also have a deadline for a project that I can't talk about. So that's March, really, a lot of writing and trying not to injure my arm again. So March, basically, I need to work loads and rest loads and hit my deadlines, but not work too hard. So yeah, that's simple, right?
It's totally doable.
Yeah.
Oh, be careful.
I know that I'm in the real danger space now because I'm starting to get movement back. Mm. Because honestly, for 2 days, I could not move my arm away from my body at all. So I'm starting to get movement back. So this is the time where I try to do too much and then relapse back. Mm. So I'm trying very hard to be good. it is very hard.
Yeah. Oh, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, just getting old, unfortunately.
Oh dear. Okay. So we have no new patrons this week, but a huge, huge thank you to all of our current patrons who sponsor the show. We appreciate all of your support so very, very much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the podcast. If you'd like to join in and also support the show, you can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors.
Our monthly sessions of Sprints and Giggles, an evening where we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh, are open to all of our listeners. To get the link to join in, just make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter or a member of our Facebook group.
Okay, let's get into our main topic. So what did our guests this month have to say? So I spoke to Troy Lambert from Plotter, and we talked about how Plotter can help mainly plotters, funnily enough, plot their novels, but also their world building, you know, story Bible type section of the software as well. Angeline, what was your guest?
So I had a very nerdy chat with Evelyn Puerto, who is an epic fantasy author, and she said all the things that excite me. I may have got a little bit excited chatting to her, but she was talking about how she organizes her huge and vast epic fantasy worlds largely in Scrivener, but she also uses Excel spreadsheets and good old notebooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I spoke to Christina Stanley, who's the CEO of Fictionary, about Storyteller, her software that they've developed, which is what's it called, Story Maths, is that what you call it?
I
thought it was plotting software, but I was very wrong and she corrected me very nicely. But it's basically software that helps you develop your story.
Mm-hmm.
You put your manuscript into it and it tells you your arcs and everything, and yeah, it sounds interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start off by talking about what software and tools we each use to organise our writing.
We're meant to organise our writing?
Organisation? What's that?
It is optional.
What do I use to actually organise my writing? I write in... some of the stuff I write in... LibreOffice, which is an open source, is basically like Microsoft Word, and fully compatible with Microsoft Word, because I do a weird thing where I actually format the paper book as I write it. So I write in a pre-formatted template, which is, I know, is quite strange.
Makes sense. It saves time later, doesn't it?
That's what I think. But I have also been writing a lot in Atticus, just because largely the same reason Julia loves Atticus. It's a one-stop shop for like everything. So I haven't yet got to the point where I've finished a book in Atticus. So I haven't used the formatting there yet at all. I haven't got to that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's largely where I write, but I don't organizing, I put all my world building notes and my series notes and everything in notebooks that I then forget to update and rarely ever look at. But that's typical of my organization strategy.
You hold it all in your head, don't
it
you?
Is all in my head, which I'm probably crazy for, but somehow it works.
Yeah, if it works, it works. Yeah. So I use Scrivener, and my use of the more organizational stuff has been limited, but I'm starting to increase that. So for this whirlwind week of working on a new book, for the first time ever, no notebook, no written analog notes at all. And I was just using Scrivener and just in the binder, just creating new like research documents and putting notes in there. So for character and setting notes. But yeah, I really like Scrivener for all its, you know, various bells and whistles that can help with that. And I do want to make more use of it because it is handy to have everything in one place. But yeah, I'm typically more of a notepad kind of person. I like having physical written notes. What little plotting I do, I tend to use the plot embryo method, which so I need a printout for that. I need to physically write onto it. And yeah, and then I have spreadsheets, which have made Julia weep in the past, because I have like a character spreadsheet and I have a column in it for death, because I can anticipate I kill a lot of characters and I like to keep track of how and when they died. So yeah, I have a spreadsheet.
That's so sad. Far too sad.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's great. So I have like, and because I have strange naming conventions for my shapeshifters, I have like a spreadsheet that's just a list of name ideas. So whenever I need a name, I can just go to that spreadsheet and kind of go, right, I'll use that name for this character. So that just helps me keep track of things like that. And then another spreadsheet for existing characters in the world and like what pack they belong to, what kind of shifter they are, you know, all that kind of thing, what their role is in the city, all of that. So yeah, I do love a spreadsheet. It's color coded as well, obviously.
Good. So. Love it. That makes up for the death part. For me, I use Atticus for writing. I'm looking forward to when they have more functionality where you can invite an editor in. I love everything being in one place. That just makes me happy. I've tried other software. I've tried Plotter before. And whilst it helped me for book two, I didn't feel like I needed it for book three. But otherwise, I keep all of my notes in Microsoft OneNote, which you can kind of separate by different notebooks and different sections and stuff. So I have lots of sections in that where I keep all of my information. It just that keeps it all in one place. And sometimes I'll print it out so that I can kind of scribble all over my own notes, add notes to my notes. Because I think sometimes you need to change up what you're doing, you know, to get clear on where you're going. But yeah, apart from that, I don't really use much Google Docs. But yeah, I've never really felt like I needed to.
Fair enough. So how have our processes and strategies changed over time?
I think I've become less organized over time, which sounds like, I know everyone will laugh, but it's because I've learned to trust that what I do works.
Yeah.
I've tried everything. Like, you know, there's such a idea in the writing community that discovery writing is wrong, and discovery writers don't plot because they don't know how to. And therefore I have tried, like I've plotted a book before where I had an index card for every single chapter and I actually plotted out every single chapter. So yeah, I think definitely over time I have become less organized and less reliant on things because I have learned to trust myself more, which I like.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
I feel like that, I think. And obviously I haven't been writing as long as either of you have. But I do feel like after I wrote book one and got into the writing community, I've said this before, I felt like I should be doing more and doing it differently and plotting better and, you know, doing this, that and the other. But I still just, I've tried various softwares, like a lot of them, even Scrivener. I even tried Scrivener.
Mm-hmm.
But I always default back to just Microsoft OneNote because I'll just, it just works for me. Like, why change something that is fine?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't really feel like much has changed for me. Just, I started using Scrivener quite early on. I did used to use OpenOffice. I just wrote straight into Docs. But yeah, I've been using Scrivener probably since about 2014. So yeah, and notebooks have always been there. So I don't think I've really changed much at all. But it is that I feel like I've tried other things but and just gone straight back to what works for me. So yeah, but like I said, I'm starting to use a bit more of Scrivener's functionality now. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I plan on using more of Atticus and potentially formatting in it.
Yes. Whoa. Same.
You know, practice what I preach and all that. But we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, so with what our guests had to say, what did we relate to? What fit? What clicked?
Well, I have got to say that I enjoyed your interview, Julia, with Christina so much. I didn't know what Fictionary was. I went in with it with the same, probably the same idea in mind as you, that it was plotting software and therefore definitely not for me. Mm. But it was interesting when you're talking to her because so it's more like an editing software, more for like second draft. And you two were liking it because you love the editing process. And I was liking the sound of it because I friggin' hate the editing process. And I've got to say, while I was listening to that interview, I was also Googling the price of Fictionary. And I really think that I might give it a go.
Cool.
So
there's a 7-day free trial as well.
Yes, which is great because I tried Plotter about 2 years ago, and I think I had it for about 3 days, and I was just like, yeah, this is not what I want or need or I'm looking for.
I did think though, probably of all the options that were discussed in these episodes, the story bible aspect of Plotter got me quite excited.
I didn't know that existed at all.
Yeah, and because I do love being able to, like, my spreadsheets and, you know, how I can change how the data is sorted. So like if I need to see it, you know, this shift is delineated by pack, then I can do that, or by death I can do that. And you can do similar stuff in Plotter and, you know, connect people in different ways. And I do like how visual it is and how user-friendly it is. It's really nice, clean software, which I like. But I also thought that your guest, Angeline, Evelyn, I loved your interview and I loved how excited you both were. There is so much to be said for that enthusiasm. And yeah, obviously I already use Scrivener, so it was like ding ding ding, yes. I love that it can do all those things too.
Yeah, see, I just want all the good things about Plotter and all the good things about Scrivener in Atticus. I just want it all in one place. Like, I liked what Evelyn was saying about Scrivener being able to have your manuscript on one side and your notes and stuff open on the other side. I mean, I do that with split screen on my PC anyway, but I think Fictionary Storyteller sounds fascinating. I'm not, I can't decide if I would find it useful or not, but I'm willing to give it a go. I just need to write a first draft first.
Yes. That's where I am. I need to finish a first draft of something and then give it a go. Yeah.
Okay. So was there anything that didn't resonate?
Just being organized in general, like,
yeah. Yeah.
We chose this topic. So.
Yeah. Because like when I was talking to Evelyn and she was talking about Scrivener and like listening to Troy and Christina, it's all digital. Mm. It's all digital organization. And oh my goodness, like I have tried pretty much every single digital organization tool out there and I have not stuck with any of them ever. I can just about manage to keep myself organized with pen and paper. But yeah, I carry almost everything in my head, which is crazy. But yeah, just digital organization just does not work for me and never has. And I'm yet to, you know, I'm always open to try new things, but I am yet to find any digital organization tool that actually works for me.
See, I prefer digital stuff over pen and paper. So, but the thing that I struggle with organization is that sometimes, I don't know, it makes it feel like the creative process is being restricted somehow because I feel like I should be making all these notes and organizing it perfectly, but that probably comes down to my perfection issues. Like, but it makes it feel like I just want to throw myself in and write the book and not have to worry about keeping Plotter updated or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. For me, the thing that just really doesn't click, and this is absolutely nothing against Christina or Fictionary, because I think both are wonderful and the Fictionary community is wonderful, but the software is not for me. I find the whole concept of story maths to be just anathema to how I write and how I want to write. I'm a very intuitive writer, and I find the whole concept of hitting specific beats at a specific percentage point through the book to be rigid and just not for me. I think it's great, like if you are a really new writer and you haven't yet learned your process and you haven't really learned how to write a story yet, it can be incredibly valuable and really useful. So it's not to say I'm not poo-pooing the whole concept, it's just not for me. I don't feel like I need it. I know from having done this for a long time and having worked with editors, I know that my story structure is sound, so I don't feel the need to put it into a software to check it. So
it's understandable. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it may have felt like a slightly plotting heavy theme this month, so let's just focus on us discovery writers a little bit. What do you think discovery writers can take from our interviews this month?
Deadly silence. I've seen nothing. It sounds, you know, it sounds weird set, but actually a big takeaway that I had, particularly from your interview with Troy, Holly, was a reiteration that I need to trust in myself and that I don't fit into a box. I don't fit into someone else's idea of what discovery writing is, because Troy had a lot of quite set ideas about what a discovery writer is and how they work. And I loved that bit where he talked about where he met somebody that did like section plotting, you know, who writes like 10,000 words and then plots the next 10,000 words, then writes it, then plots the next. And I was like, in plotting terms, like that's probably closest to where I am, because I wouldn't do it in a 10K chunk. Mine are much bigger, but I have these certain points where I do take a pause and I'll go and plot the next section, but I do it in my head, unsurprisingly. But yeah, and I liked when he was like, that was, I've never met anyone who does it like that. And I was like, it was really nice to have that reiteration that we should trust in our process if it works for us. Obviously, if it's not working for us, then that's when we need to try some new things. But mm-hmm. if it's working for us, and my system definitely works for me, you know, listening to people talking about plotting and organization and everything like that, it's just a nice reiteration that actually I'm doing okay. I may not be doing whatever other people are doing, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I do think that like discovery writers could make use of all the software that has been mentioned. Not all aspects of all of it, but like I said already, the world building, story bible part of Plotter, mm-hmm. Scrivener, obviously anyone can use that.
Yeah.
And Fictionary, as Christina explained, is an editing tool. So, you know, once you've got your discovery written draft, you can then plug it in and use the software to help refine it. So there's a lot there for discovery writers. But yeah, I think also the reassurance that there's nothing wrong with us. We're not broken.
We're not.
Not doing it wrong. And I would, if you guys don't mind, I would like to take this opportunity to announce what my non-fiction book is about.
Yeah, go for it.
So I've been keeping this quite close to my chest, as any few people who know. But yeah, the book I'm writing is on discovery writing, because like you said, Ange, there's a lot of misconceptions about how we actually write books. And you know, this assumption that it's only beginners who write this way, and that, you know, professional in air quotes writers must plot, and that in order to write quickly and in order to write cleanly, you have to plot. And that's all nonsense. And I really want to bust those myths and help discovery writers to see that there is nothing wrong with what we do. And also, I mean, I would like plotters to read it and have their eyes opened a bit as well. So the bulk of the book is going to be based on case studies of discovery writers and talking to them, which is why I'm doing interviews about how they work. And I also have a survey on my website. So if anyone listening would like to, you know, share a bit about how you write, you can find that at hbline.com/survey. And we'll stick a link to that in the show notes. But that would be great. I would really like some more data to, you know, yeah, to kind of look at patterns and see what we have in common. Because yes, we're all different, but yeah, what do we have in common? I would like to figure that out.
Yep, sounds good. As a discovery writer, I'm very excited to have when your book is published, because yeah, me and you have talked about it before. There are so few writing craft books out there specifically for discovery writers.
Mm-hmm.
So few.
Yeah, I have all of them. There are four.
Yeah. And I remember you showing me the pile of the four, and I have three of them, and one is on my wish list and was already on my Amazon wish list. So
yeah. So yeah, did you have anything to say about discovery writers, Junior?
No, just everything you just said. Just that, yeah, you know, discovery writers don't plot, that's fine, but it's still helpful to organize and keep your world mm-hmm. in view. So, you know, you may be coming up with the ideas, but once you've had the ideas, organize them.
Mm. Yeah.
Must we?
Because, you know, it's still really invaluable to have notes and, you know, have character details, eye colour. Yeah. I know.
And there's not many people like Angeline who just hold it all in their head. Most people do.
Many crazy people.
Most people keep notes of things.
I do actually. I find it really interesting, like what you just said there, Holly, about knowing characters' eye color, because that's an example that people. I remember Troy saying that about the story Bible stuff that's in Plotter, how it's really important to keep track of characters' eye colour. And I do wonder if my the reason I am probably less organised than anyone else is because I never describe my characters what they look like. Mm. I have in my head, I know what they look like to me, but you will be hard pushed to find any character's eye colour, hair colour, what they're wearing, what colour their skin is, anything like that in any of my books.
Do you do that on purpose, or is that just the way you write?
It's just the way I write, because I started in short stories and that's where all my writing background is. It's that economy of words. Mm. And so, yeah, it's just because it's, if it's not important to the plot what colour someone's eyes are, I never mention it, and I don't think I've ever found it important to the plot ever.
it was in my books.
Yeah. And yeah, there are books where it is important to the plot, but yeah, if it's not important to the plot, then I just don't mention it. Mm. And yeah, I never describe my characters. So it's always interesting that people always give that as an example, and I'm like, wow, I never need that. Maybe that's why I've always dismissed these things.
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I do usually describe the physical characteristics of my characters, but sometimes it's quite brief, and I'll just pick out like one key thing that is noticeable about them. So like in The Blood, I had a character who was particularly tall, and that was all the description I gave of him. And I actually had a reader complain. I had someone email me to say, well, how are we supposed to know what he looks like? And I'm like, use your imagination.
Obviously,
I didn't say that.
Well.
I did politely reply, but yeah, you know, a lot of readers do need some detail. They can't just make it up themselves. So yeah, but those readers would not be your readers, and
they would not.
Okay, so when it comes to organization, what do we struggle with?
Everything.
Being organized at all. No, I think it's the expectation of plotting. And I know, you know, we've talked about this a lot. Just like, I feel like I should be plotting or doing more or organizing more or doing it a different way. So I'm still stuck on that. I'm still working through that, but I'm fairly new. So
I'll get there. It is something that you need to work through, and something that I continue to work through. And it's sad that we feel the need to do that. And yeah, it shouldn't be that way. But yeah, it's definitely something that you need to work through to convince yourself that actually the way you do it is okay. Mm-hmm. With the organization, yeah, it's just keeping it up to date. So every time I start a new world for a new series, I create like a series Bible for it where I intend to write down all the information. And I start off doing it really well, and then I just start to forget, and then it gets to the point where it's so behind what I'm writing that I'd have to like spend a day filling in all the details that I've forgotten to put in, so I just can't be bothered. So yeah, my series Bibles last for about like half the first book of a series. And then, yeah, it's all just in my head from then on, which I don't recommend as a strategy for everyone.
Yeah, I think there's nothing I struggle with actual organisation. I have a system.
That's a shock.
I know. What I do works for me. But yeah, it's struggling with that. It's almost like peer pressure, isn't it? Like we're a wonderful community, don't get me wrong. I think the writing community is one of the least judgmental and lovely places that I've ever you know, been involved in my whole life. But there is still, or maybe, you know, we project it. Maybe the judgment isn't really there.
Maybe we're just too sensitive.
Yeah. I don't know. But it feels like, yeah, it feels like we're under a microscope almost, and that everyone is comparing themselves to everyone else. And oh, it's just not helpful. It's just not.
No.
No. So have any of us been convinced to try something new?
Well, I am definitely going to give Fictionary a go when I have a finished first draft, which I am not anywhere near at the moment. You know, fiction, obviously. This is not something I've put non-fiction through.
No.
But yeah, I'm definitely going to try Fictionary. I'm sorry, but I'm not convinced to give either Plotter another go or Scrivener another go.
No.
I've tried them both. They're not for me. But yeah, I've never tried Fictionary. So if it helps take away some of the agony that I feel every time I have to do editing, then I'm willing to give it a try. But yes, like you, Holly, if it starts going, oh, well, you need to move your climax like 3,000 words early, that would be it for me. I'd be like, okay, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. But if it can help with editing in a way that Pro Writing Aid doesn't, then yeah.
Yeah, you need both. I would be committed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, no, Plotter's just not really for me. And Scrivener is definitely not for me. I've tried it. I watched tutorials. I threw it away. with Fictionary Storyteller, I feel like I want to try it, but I worry that it will make me overanalyze things again. And I don't want to overanalyze the way I write, because then I just end up in a downward spiral of not trusting myself yet and thinking, am I doing this right? Is this good enough? You know, whereas actually I've written books without it and they've been well received. And yeah, do I need it? I don't know. So I may give it a go. I may not. We'll see.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just using some more of Scrivener's functionality, making more use of the research area.
Yeah.
Every time I like hear anyone like from Scrivener, or who like is, I guess, sort of like an informal ambassador for Scrivener, talking about how they use it, I'm always like, I really should try using more of it. I did try switching it to dark mode this month, and that was interesting. Like, it spoiled the corkboard. I like the corkboard feature. It literally looks like a corkboard, but when it's in dark mode, it's just like a black screen with squares on it. That's not as fun. That was the only thing really for me. So yeah, but I'm glad we, you know, explored the topic and spoke to these people, because we did get some really good interviews. So with the recent emergence of all this extra software often made by writers for writers, what do we see as the future, both for us personally and in the industry? This is a great question.
Did you write this question, Holly?
No, I didn't.
Actually, I wrote this question.
Oh, Angeline. I thought you were bragging on yourself.
No.
Well done, Angeline. It's a very good question. For me, I still just want everything in one place. And yeah, I'm still going to mention Atticus and that I like it. And I think it has massive potential.
I think that's what we're going to see more of.
Yeah,
as well, more integrations, more.
Yeah.
And I think all this software that's coming out that is made by writers for writers, it's so collaborative, because they're so open to writers going, I would really like it if they could do this. And I think the future is going to be more collaborative building of software as well.
Yeah.
But then Atticus, Dave Chesson was also talking about collaborating with Amazon and getting, you know, data and stuff from Amazon, and that could really help as well.
Yeah,
just to keep it all in one place for me. I just please.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, much the same as you guys, I think this it's inevitable that is where, you know, the future is going to go. It's just what role AI is going to play in that. And
yeah,
you know, it's already starting to be the case that, you know, it's almost like, I don't know, I'm a little nervous that we're going to see a swing towards trusting computers and algorithms to tell us what's good. And I don't think that's the way we should be going.
I think we will for a time.
Yeah.
And I think there will be pushback because, interestingly enough, I wish I had looked this up because I can't remember which publisher it is. But there is, I was reading this week that a publisher have had to shut down their submissions page because they have been absolutely inundated with AI written stories because an online influencer was like, this is how you get rich quick, right? Write stories written by AI. So I think we will see a pushback from the industry, from the publishing industry, saying no AI, no AI written stories. Obviously, AI is going to continue to get more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that I don't necessarily think it's something we need to be scared of, but it's something we should all be informed about.
And pushing back on. It takes away the creativity out of everything. Yeah.
I know.
And it's ripping pieces from people who have been creative. That's what I don't like about the art one, you know, the AI art. It's just taking pieces from other artists and rehashing it and not crediting or, you know, monetarily contributing to the actual artists. And it's not right.
And it's the same with the writing AI because it is trained on copyrighted material. Mm-hmm. And if you're creating anything with the help of AI writing software, you need to run it through a plagiarism checker.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've used AI writing tools, and what spewed out was, it's a good prompt. It can give you really good prompts, but it's certainly not of a level that I would even consider publishing that yet. But yeah, I think it's a really, really interesting debate. And the fact that we have already seen a publisher shut down their submissions because they've been inundated. I mean, like, their editors were just overflowing with submissions. And I think we'll see a pushback from the industry putting their foot down and saying, no AI.
Yeah. It's just, how is that going to affect indies as well? Like, because the big tech companies are not going to say no.
No.
So when Amazon,
no, you can
is
self-publish,
like,
anything, can't you?
Yeah. So
but
when
you
Amazon
can
quite
already.
Happily,
yeah, but then the market will get more saturated. That's the trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we're already in a saturated market. You know,
it'll get worse.
I think it will for a time, but you know, readers, they know quality.
Mm.
You know, a reader knows a good book from a poor book.
Mm.
You know, so I don't think it's something to be terrified about.
Do they though? Because there are some books that have been published that I'm like, really?
Oh yeah, I know, but are those your readers?
Yeah, because I want thousands of readers.
I think just because we can see, because the audiobook market is a little ahead on this than the ebook market. Obviously it was very strict, no AI narrated audiobooks. It was a hard rule, but that has started to break, and various audiobook distributors do now accept AI, like Apple.
And it's been causing a lot of controversy. And what we need to catch, what is trailing behind AI the most at the moment is the law. And we are already, there are already court cases happening that will set the precedent. So I think over the next few years, that's going to be where the big leap is, the law catching up with AI and the possibilities of AI.
But yeah, not something to be scared of. Keep an eye on. And
just be informed.
Yeah. And also, I think just, you know, it's important not to feel hopeless and helpless about it. We can actually, you know, I think it's really valuable to be thinking now about how to counter it. And I just think this is the best best advice. It's come from Joanna Penn and Becca Syme, is to be more human.
Yeah.
Focus on that real human interaction, really connect with your readers, create the most warm connecting stories that you can. And yeah, and then you'll stand out from that sea of AI written stories, because yours will be superior because they're written by a real human.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I think that about wraps up our main topic.
It does. And I'm so sorry. This is a really horrible would you rather question. I spotted it on Instagram and I was like, I have to ask the guys this. It is horrible. I'm very, very sorry. So, would you rather find living in your attic 1,000 cockroaches or a person?
That's so random.
Wow.
Yeah.
There are definitely pros and cons to both.
There definitely are.
There's no pros to either, to be fair, but
but less cons.
I would probably rather find a person, because you know, we could just physically remove them, call the police if necessary, you know. Cockroaches feels like a harder problem to deal with.
Cockroaches feels like an easier problem to deal with, because there are people who deal with, you know, the pest problems, and they come and kill them all.
But they have to kill them all.
Yeah. I don't really want my house fumigated and have to...
But the thought of, you know, how long has this person been living up there? Have they been eating my food? Have they been listening to my conversations? What do they know about me?
Getting in and out of the shower?
Yeah, no, that's horrible to me. That's a massive, like, violation of privacy.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd pick the cockroaches.
See, my thought very much went the same with Holly's, that you can call the police and that person is gone just like that, whereas a cockroach infestation may take years to get rid of. So, yeah, I think
I don't want either. I don't want either.
No, no, we don't want either.
I mean, I do have to say, like, we don't really have an attic since we had our extension done. We have like a tiny, tiny crawl space that someone could just about lie down in, but that would be it. So, extremely unlikely to happen, really.
It's all right for you then. Oh dear.
Sorry.
I'm going to go into my attic later today just to check there's no one up there.
Any strange noises you hear in your house now?
Oh my god. But that's actually happened to people before, where there's been a person living in their attic.
Yeah, it's called frogging, I believe, but spelt with a PH, not an F.
Of course.
Yeah.
Why not?
I watched a whole documentary on it. It was fascinating and terrifying.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not watching that.
It's not for you, Julia. Not for you.
No, no. I'm definitely checking my attic. I'm terrified now. Remember that if you want to join us for sprints and giggles, then make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter. And to get all of the additional benefits of supporting the show, you can do so over at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors.
And don't forget to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors.
And I will be back next week with an interview with Sasha Black. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.
Our monthly sessions of sprints and giggles, an evening where we do an evening where we cough and have to start again.